Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Chapter 22, The Process of Devotional Service. 2:22:17-19. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Devotional service to Krishna is the chief function, abhideya pradana, of the living entity. There are different methods for the liberation of the conditioned soul. Karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. But all are dependent on bhakti. Without devotional service, all the other methods of spiritual realization are weak and insignificant. Unless one comes to the devotional service of Lord Krishna, jnana and yoga cannot give the desired results. When pure knowledge is beyond all material affinity, but is not dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it does not appear very beautiful, although it is knowledge without a material tinge. What then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the beginning and transient by nature? If they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord, how can they be very attractive? Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12. Even after writing many Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva felt very morose. Therefore, his spiritual master, Narada Deva, told him that he could be happy by writing about the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Up to that time, Srila Vyasadeva had written the Karmakanda and Jnanakanda sections of the Vedas, but he had not written about Upasanakanda or Bhakti. Thus, his spiritual master, Narada, chastised him and advised him to write about the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Vyasadeva began writing Srimad Bhagavatam. Udriti, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 11. Upon seeing Vyas so dejected, Narada explained why the various books he compiled were deficient. Quote, "Even pure knowledge is insufficient if it is devoid of transcendental devotional service." Narada said, "And what to speak of fruitive activities when they are devoid of devotional service? How can they be of any benefit to the performer?" Right. So, jnana being a higher level, you know, on the yoga ladder, if it's insufficient, why karma automatically is? So, if you already reject jnana, karma just goes along with it. Right. It is accepted by all types of philosophers and transcendentalists that one who lacks knowledge cannot be liberated from material entanglement. Yet knowledge without devotional service cannot possibly award liberation. In other words, when jnana, or the cultivation of knowledge, opens onto the path of devotional service, it can give one liberation, but not otherwise. Right? So, devotional service and all that, then, on the rug this side. You need more rugs? There's another rug. Just spread it out. I can take your rug with you. Put other rugs. I guess you can't take your rug with you. That's the material world. You can't take it with you. See, we're also leaving this gap in the middle here. We leave gap. Gap. Mind the gap. Yes, thank you. I mean, sorry, it's a British thing, but we still mind the gap.
If Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana.
Yes.
the knowledge is completely pure because it's completely focused on Krishna's service.
Yes.
And in the Vedas, you have karma, jnana, and yoga.
Yes.
Where does karma, mishra bhakti, jnana, mishra bhakti, yoga, mishra bhakti fit in?
That means the point is where does the Bhagavatam's not discussing it? It means it's discussing pure devotional service. But who is studying the Bhagavatam? Who is practicing the Bhagavatam? So, in other words, the mixed devotional service comes with the person practicing it. So you don't have to worry that you have to look around for it. You bring it with you.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you go back to Godhead, you won't take it with you. So, therefore. Yeah. So, the point is we're the one that is conditioned, so we already think in karma, jnana, and yoga. So now, Bhagavatam will show how to connect it to the Lord. So it's the problem's not, as it was pointed out, here, without devotional service, all of the methods for self-realization are weak and insignificant. Unless one comes to the devotional service of Lord Krishna, jnana and yoga cannot give the desired results. Right? When pure knowledge is beyond all material affinity but is not dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, means the knowledge that you're discussing is beyond the material understanding, but it's not in connection with the Lord, it's not dedicated to the Lord, then it says it does not appear very beautiful, although it is knowledge without material tinge. What then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the beginning and transient by nature? They are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord. How can they be very attractive? So the point that comes out is how it's all connected to the Lord. So in Vyasadeva will have how's the word used?
Deliberate.
Hmm?
Deliberated on, then
he wrote down, he documented the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. So of that, one book is transcendental knowledge, and the other 13 are material knowledge. You know, like that. And so the idea is that if you have the spiritual knowledge, then you can understand how all the material knowledge connects to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so that's what Bhagavatam does. That's why you see all topics are in Bhagavatam. So it's discussing all the 14 books, but in their natural context of service to the Lord, which the 14 books themselves that may not be directly understood as that. Like, let's say in Manu, then, means how you say the in the opening shloka, then it will be mentioned that the sages are approaching Lord Brahma because they want to know about Varnashram, but Varnashram in the context of service to this Lord. Right? So that's the only place where it mentions that aspect directly. All the next, 1,999 shlokas will be talking about the mechanics of how those things are done. So it's understood. You use this knowledge to serve the Lord. But it doesn't show how to or give an indication. So there won't be a satisfaction because people read Manu and say it has nothing to do with devotional service. They'll say it's not for devotees. It's not for Kali Yuga. It's not this. It's not that. All these things. When the opening verse says it's about... The point is the sages know. These are great sages. They already know Varnashra. But they want to know it in the context of the Lord. So even in the creation, then it shows, opens the creation and shows, therefore, how from the Lord the creation is there, and then where does Varnashram become manifest? So then you see that connection. And then after that, you're supposed to connect, so the great sages will do that. Because the work is not a general reading. Like anybody reads, Gita Bhagavatam. But Manu is actually only meant for those who are in leadership positions. They, for them, then it has some meaning, because then they can apply and train others in it.
Your Prabhupada does quotes Manu Samhita in context of bhakti.
Yes.
Not often, but
yeah.
You know, he does.
Yes, yes. And the interesting thing when he quotes, it's that's full verses,
yes.
You know, as it is. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, and he also mentions in the Gita about how studying the mano is for leadership. ISKCON leadership should know that, like that. So, because then, in other words, if you can read it and it makes sense, then it's for you to use. If you read it, it doesn't make sense, it's not for you to use. It's for you to, you know, understand it in its context to you from someone else who does understand it. You know, so it's like you have the teacher's handbook for the third grade. That's not for the third graders, that's for the teacher. And the books that are given, that's for the students, but that's learned in the context of the teacher who's that. So the Vedic knowledge, none of it's do it yourself. You know, it's not meant that you read it, you'll understand. You have to hear it in parampara, like that. Then it can be understood. So the difficulty comes is that Vyasadeva has written all these books and mentioned that, but it's not that people will catch that that's the most essential point. I mean, if you work by the Mimamsaka understanding, the opening and the end should be, means he opens with, we want to know Varna Ashram according to how it connects to Lord Vishnu. And the last verse is, and therefore, you know, a Brahmin, he should conduct his life in this way. Right? So then we understand as the Brahmin should conduct his life of following Varna Ashram in connection with the Lord. And then from that, see everything. But who knows these things? If someone says they read Manu Samhita, right? You ask, oh, okay, what does it say? The only thing they'll mention is that if somebody steals something, you cut off a finger or something. That's it. I'm not joking. Like 2,000 shlokas, and they can only pull out that, and that's not even a whole shloka. That's just part of a shloka. That's it. They don't notice anything else.
Somehow it made its way into the Quran.
Oh, okay. So, because after reading it, that's all they understood. They remembered.
You still get your hands cut off.
Yeah, so it's like that. So then, so you know, that's all they can relate to. So that's why then, if that's all you heard from it, it's not, the book's not for you. It doesn't mean the teachings aren't for you, but you studying the book and applying it's not for you. So therefore, Where is that instruction that shows how all these books of knowledge, how they connect to Krishna? That's Srimad Bhagavatam. So then you're going to see, means we're thinking that, okay, it's progressing through that, and you see, oh, Kardama, you know, he's a brahmachari, but you know, he's intelligent, he's focused on the Lord, but still having material desire, he wants to get married, and then, you know, the whole process there. And so, you know, you're taking it up from all these different devotees and that, going up, and then you see in sixth canto, then so many great kings and all that, you know, that they're nicely engaged. It mentions that. But in seventh canto, then you see pure devotional service being brought to the front. And that's the topic, you know, directly. And so then we'll think, oh, it's up like this. But then when you get to 11th canto, you find out that this pure devotional service and everything connected to the Lord has been discussed through the whole Bhagavatam, just we don't catch it. So it's progressively taking us up through. That's why then the first nine cantos is to prepare you for the 10th canto. And just in case you missed the point, then the 11th and 12th, then they make sure that you understood what it was you were supposed to gain from 10th canto. So like that. So that's yes, that's the whole presentation. So that's being pointed out by Narad Muni, is that you've written, in other words, the Vedic literatures were already the indirect preaching. And Narad Muni pointed out that it's useless, no one will catch it. Because how will you make pure devotees? So therefore, then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, that's direct preaching. You know, so Gita, direct, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, these are core literature. So for us, we're studiers of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's our book. You know, as every sampradaya has their main book. So for us, it's Bhagavatam. Like that. And so then Gita is the preliminary study, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavatam. So that's the the position. Then you can see is Bhagavatam shows how people who are performing mixed devotional service came to pure devotional service, like Dhruva Maharaj. He just wanted a kingdom. You know? That's all he wanted. But in doing so, if he followed, because he followed the directions of Narad Muni, you know, first of his mother and then of Narad Muni, of how to attain the Lord. But he wanted to attain the Lord just to get a kingdom. But then once attaining the Lord, then he saw that this is pretty useless. So then he was absorbed in the Lord and took up pure devotional service. So you see is that Bhagavatam would give example of people starting with mixed devotional service and coming to the pure state. Or people starting, you know, not practicing properly and really not ending up well. You know, like daksha, you know. You know, he's, you know, doesn't deal properly and all that. He ends up with a goat head. You know, it doesn't work out. And then, yeah. And Bhagavatam later will then explain how even that kind of doesn't work out for him. So then he has to take birth again. I forget from who he takes birth this time. But then someone else, another demigod becomes his father and he takes birth again, this time without a goat head. So now his wife will be a bit happier. Right? But he I think, meditates through, I'm not sure, maybe the whole Chakshusha Manu or something?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's some major work, you know. Like that. So then these things are pointed out. But then you see in there he's offering the Hamsaguya prayers. So even though he may be engaged in karma, it's only successful because of his worship of the Lord. So that's the whole point, is that karma and jnana can't give their benefits without bhakti. It just won't. You can get some superficial elements, but you still have to use the qualities of bhakti. You have to be selfless, you have to be dedicated, you have to be focused, you know, it means you have to follow the natural laws, natural laws that govern the particular object that you are trying to obtain. Like, say it's money, there's laws that govern how money works. So you have to follow those laws. You have to be dedicated to money. Then only you get money. So it's still, you're using bhakti, but you're just not connecting it to the Lord. And someone who then uses the same thing but connected to the Lord, that's even quicker. But someone who just worships the Lord without these things, then that's the best. Because the point is you're trying to develop that pure love for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why it says it won't give the results. Because it may give some material results, but you won't get, as a yoga system, it won't give results without bhakti. Because when we say karma yoga, we mean it's a yoga system. Jnana yoga is a yoga system. Astanga yoga is a yoga system. But bhakti is the one that, it is the yoga system. The other words are derivatives. Does that make sense? You know. Yeah. So without the main ones, the derivatives don't function. So even you want to let's say, buy and sell in derivatives, still you have to, it's based on the main thing that they're derivatives of. Does that make sense? You know, if corn goes down, your cornflakes go down. No corn, no cornflakes. Is that? Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. 2:22-26. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Those who perform severe austerities and penances, those who give away all their possessions out of charity, those who are very famous for their auspicious activity, those who are engaged in meditation and mental speculation, and even those who are very expert in reciting the Vedic mantras, are not able to obtain any auspicious results, although they are engaged in auspicious activities, if they do not dedicate their activities to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But, I therefore repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose glories are always auspicious. Footnote 13. This is also quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.17, spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So, they won't give any... So, auspicious results means Krishna. He's auspicious. Right? So, the Bhagavatam's... in 11th canto, it defines that auspicious means it's in connection with the Lord. And what's not in connection with the Lord is inauspicious. Right? So, within the material world, what's inauspicious... we may then say, oh, this is better and this is not. Like wet stool, dry stool. Mm. Right? Doing your pious activities, going to the heavenly planets, that's better. Doing sinful activities, going down to hell, that's worse. But you're still in the material world. You're just in a nicer situation or not, like Prabhupada says. Gold chains, silver chains, iron chains. But you're still chained. So the whole point is that without connecting to Krishna, no material activity can give any auspicious result. It will keep you in the material world. Right? For those within the material world, you have, it's called auspicious and inauspicious, because then they're inspired to try to uplift themselves and engage in auspicious activities. But the only point of engaging in auspicious activities is within those auspicious activities you come in contact with the pure devotees. Right, you're doing yajna, then your priest might be a Vaishnav. You're dealing in yan, then the person there might be Vaishnav. Or yoga, they might be Vaishnav. So in that way, then you're elevated. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the typical Hindu. Then, you know, if they're interested, you know, that devotees come over to the house and do a program, because, you know, anybody who's doing spiritual stuff could come to the house and do a program. And it's natural that, you know, they'll prepare something to eat, they'll invite some friends, there'll be some offering, there'll be some discussions about spiritual activity, there'll be some kirtan. That's just standard presentation. And so they'll have so many bogus people coming over and all that. But then, in that, they'll be open also to devotees coming. So if they're sincere, then they might come in contact with the devotees. If not, then yes, there's so many people they can go to. So it's pious, but its only purpose is to bring you closer to Krishna. Without doing that, yes, you go up the thing and come back down the other side. So how is it auspicious?
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking in the realm of yoga, the two masters who took, Iyengar took yoga to the West, and his teacher was Krishna Namacharya. Krishna Namacharya was a Vaishnava. I mean, you know, every time you see him, you've got a Vaishnava tilak, the Brahmin thread, he's very pious, worship the deities. But it seemed they drew a line. When they were teaching yoga, they only taught yoga. They never brought students into the philosophy. Because I think they would have no customers in India.
Good chance. At least not in L.A.
But it was clear that both of them were very pious, religious people in their own private lives. But they didn't hide anything. But still, it was very evident to the students that they were practicing Hindus. And yet, they were just interested in the technique of yoga and not in the spirituality.
Yeah, so who inquired? Because that's the thing, is if somebody did inquire, they might have explained it to them. Because otherwise, if Iyengar himself knew some of this spirituality, he would have learned it from the teacher. So that means he would have done the yoga and heard that.
Yes.
And if his teacher was such a good yogi, he had to have a teacher.
Yes.
You know, and you know, so it's a good chance, especially if he's in the Ramanuja line. Sri line is a good chance he didn't study from a Shankarite or something. You know, so you do have those Vaishnavas that do know the yoga things, but they'll see it in the context of devotional service. You know. So then the point is who's inquiring. So that's their whole thing. You know. Well, like in India, you know, you just study, you do like that. What you know, you can show something else. But in the West, then they get into this whole thing, and it's an identity. So they have to make rules like only if you've studied for 7 years and done their course, then you can teach on their behalf and this and that. No other school has such a stringent thing. but others don't teach in the West. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, so that's the same principles that Narad Muni is pointing out here. Again, soft preaching. So, if someone asks, then okay, then we'll tell. But the point is this. We're looking at it as soft preaching is a new thing that we've come up with because we're so intelligent, we're so smart, you know, because it's Kali Yuga and, you know, we're from the West, we know the thing, and there's the Vedic thing. They don't really know the West, but we do, and so then we worked out this perfect balance and all that. The point is this soft preaching goes back to day one of Lord Brahma, you know, and take 1 times 360 times 50. And that many days have gone by, you know. So it's as old as the hills. But we're dealing with it as if, you know, it's something new and fresh that we've come up with and like that. But that's the way. That's just the way the material thing does. You change a little something and it's completely new. Voila, it's something, you know. So that's the problem. Is here is that Narad Muni's pointing out that. No, unless you directly tell them about Krishna. You can come in, like Prabhupada in some lectures, he's talking about the supreme whole. Yes. Like that, but he'll bring it around, and once that's there, then he'll show how the jiva and then servant of the Lord and the supreme, then he'll bring it in. So he might start with that, but he doesn't end with that. So he's already got terms, and we don't mix that, we just catch the direct ones. The Prabhupada already gave how you deal the supreme absolute, the supreme whole, you know, the supreme Brahman, you know, like he's given these, and what are the technical techniques that you can use to bring someone to the point of understanding where you can introduce them to the personality of Godhead. So it's already there. He was already doing that. It means that the technical stuff that we're discussing, like in the morning in the Sandarbhas, he's already talking in 1966 at that yoga retreat. He's already discussing that level of technicality. But, you know, using examples and nicely that everyone uses. And if you listen to those, you see it's all very technical philosophies, using all the terminologies, he's using all the different things. So it's there, and then what, you know, what we catch, then, you know, that you emphasize. So you see it's there, and then after, at some point, I'm not sure when it was, at some point, like in the early 70s and that, or some later, then you see is the emphasis is, or maybe it's a little bit later, mid-70s, the emphasis is always, you're not this body. You know, just to convince, it says, yes, you're not this body. Okay, what, you're not this body. Not this body, you know, it's like that, so. So it's not that it's there. So there's nothing new. Somehow or another we think we're new, we're unique, we're special. But no, we're just more conditioned. We're some of the 400,000, you know, species of uncivilized human beings. You know, so there's 400,000. So that, you know, there's a good variety there. Don't tell that to somebody who's woke, though. Otherwise, you get in trouble. Yes. Yes.
The Jnanis are known as mental speculators.
Yes.
So, the Jnanis, they studied Vedas, Upanishads. But they are always concocting their own things.
Yes.
So they are knowing that they have no disciplic succession.
They have a disciplic, means the jnanis have a disciplic succession of jnanis. So let's say like the Shankaracharya, then he's their acharya for all those who follow the Mayavad philosophy, whatever branch they're following. So there's always a school, there's six schools of Vedic thought. And so that way everybody will fall in line with one of those or a combination. But the problem is all of them except for Vyasadeva, you know, and the Vaishnava understanding of Vyasadeva and the four sampradayas, then they'll all be mundane interpretations. Because they'll either be interested in karma jnana, so it won't come beyond. So their method of speculation and all that may be according to their particular line, but the point is all of these are not in line with the actual absolute truth. So you won't actually get a proper understanding. You want to advance in a particular material ability or understanding, that you can get. But you won't get out of the material world. You know, it's just like, let's say, you can go to a car mechanic and he can do and show you how to fix your car. But it doesn't mean by doing that you get out of the material world. Does that make sense? You won't get out.
So only the school of bhakti will bring that.
Only the school of bhakti will show you how to go actually beyond. Some schools talk about getting out. All the Vedic schools talk about getting out, except Jaimini. They all talk about getting out. But the point is they will only temporarily get out. It's like a ball. You throw it up in the air. It's out for some time. And then it comes back down. Because unless you have some place to take shelter of, being in energy, you have to take shelter. So if you don't take shelter of anything, you come back. We've taken shelter here. We leave this. We'll come back to here. Right? But we take shelter of Krishna. Then we'll go there and take shelter of Krishna. Then we'll stay there. That makes sense? So the problem is through intellect you can't understand bhakti, because you're just using the mechanics of the mind and intelligence and senses, which are all imperfect. Right? They're made of material energy, so they can't understand what's beyond. But by the process given in the Vedas, they can bring you close to, and then Krishna will reveal. But the problem is unless you follow the Vaishnava line, Krishna doesn't reveal. So the others just speculate and keep going around in circles.
So all other schools, they don't follow what the Acharya says, they just...
They pick and choose what they like.
So only the school of bhakti, we are following what the former Acharya...
Yeah, Acharya has nicely said, you know, foregoing that. Others are following aspects of... That means they may be what their sampradaya shows to follow, that much they'll follow. But the point is it's not enough. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? It's not enough. You know, they may be dealing with real things, but it's not enough. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, we have a sack of potatoes, and then we have a big pot of potatoes that are cooked. Okay? So, what if we don't discuss the recipe for cooking that in between? So we talk about, yes, we have potatoes, we should have a preparation, this is the, you know, the ultimate goal and this and that, but they're not discussing the recipe or parts of the recipe. Somebody peels the potatoes, then they sit there and hope that it turns into a cooked preparation. Somebody else cuts them but doesn't peel them, someone peels them then cuts them. You know what I'm saying? Someone else, if they're unique, they grate them. You know, someone has the sack of potatoes, they throw a handful of salt on top of it. Some take them out of the sack, then throw the handful of salt on top.
Some only cook the spices.
Yeah, so like that. So then how will it be? So they're using elements from the Vedas that are bona fide, just they don't put it all together. Only the Vaishnavas show how it all goes together. They have the complete recipe. So that's why we say is that if you have bhakti, all others are included. So if you have the Vaishnava recipe of bhakti, it's the full recipe. And if you have this much of the recipe, it's called, you know, Hatha Yoga. This much is called, Kriya Yoga. This much is called Raja Yoga. This much is called Dhyana Yoga. You know what I'm saying? This much is called, you know how you say, renunciation. So you have all these different things that they're taking different parts. Like when you cook, you're detached, right? Because you're cooking it for Krishna. So if you only take the detachment part, you know, just like the jnanis, they don't do any activity. So we take the detachment, we don't do any activity. So therefore, are you going to end up with the potatoes cooked? No, they're even detached from the potatoes, so they end up with nothing. So in their detachment, someone else walks off with the potatoes, and they're not worried. But they still think, I'm going to get those potatoes at the end. Right?
I'm sorry, my English is not very clear, but maybe I try. So the, you last giving the potato solution, but my question is this. Be using tilak, be chanting Mangalarati morning, but that detach the potatoes means myself, I'm saying. I think most of it, but myself. When we are going buying sabji like this, I'm not thinking to Krishna satisfied. What I like, I'm choosing. And when I'm cooking, I'm trying to detach. Because that is level for I need moksha. I don't have love. So what is situation? Because we don't been in with Krishna. If we are there, we not follow. What is situation for give up this? Maybe you can say, keep doing, but real love is where, like bhakti is where.
Okay. See, is that...
Can you say more? Like,
yeah. Means the... see, is that we may go out, buy the subsidies we want, cook the recipe that we want, you know, the volume that we're going to eat, or, you know, or for the occasions that we want. But the point is at the end you're going to offer it to Krishna. So you're starting with yourself, but then you're going to offer it to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So that's then where it takes on the devotional aspect. Right?
That is not still, that is not love.
It doesn't matter.
It's like moksha mood.
Yeah,
I
but yes, but the point is you have to start somewhere, no? Means we're in the material world. Then you have the moksha aspect. Then you have the spiritual world, right? Where is bhakti? So the thing is we're moving in the right direction, right? So when you connect it to Krishna, then you become purified. And why are we thinking material enjoyment or moksha is because of material covering, contamination. So you purify the contamination, then we get, we're able to appreciate the devotional aspect. But as long as we're covered by karma and jnana, how will we appreciate? So it's by service to Krishna that we become purified. So yes, in the beginning, we may be using our intelligence. That's why it's called buddhi yoga. You're using your intelligence that you know that this is there and this is a higher position, and so you keep at it, and that's how you're using your intelligence. And then we get purified. That would be one aspect, how it's working forward. Two, taste. All taste comes from Krishna. It's just a matter of whether we identify that it does come from Krishna or not. So even in our devotional service, the taste we get is still coming from Krishna. But we're not. We may appreciate how it is Krishna. The chanting is Krishna, or anything else is Krishna. Taking prasad is Krishna. We'll think it's, oh, this preparation is so nice, but it's so nice because Krishna's tasted it. Like that. So rasa comes from Krishna. It doesn't come. It's not from the material world. It comes from the spiritual world. So the point is that we're saying, you know, and we have an attraction for that. So the point is we're talking about love. Love means when the focus or the attraction is complete. If it's only partial, then it will be at whatever level it is, shradu, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriya, like that. And so when it comes to bhava, then when that becomes to the point where it's focused, then that will come to prema.
Here is also one point. You can correct me if I'm wrong, because Mahaprabhu said if no 64 rounds, like one leg, no chanting, Krishna no take anything. Rupa Goswami told Kanishta is who chanting 24 hours. Means we are far. So my point is this, I'm not judging, but the mandir, like this chili also, Krishna no eating, Radha, like pushing Krishna, you eat it, but Radha Rama no eating, Jagannath no eating, this is rose somehow. So that is no prasad we eating, mostly. I'm not judging because no time maybe people, but where I can go time for my sake, because I'm Grihastha, I keep carrying babies, like I'm doing some activities like whatever. But where is the point? How we do this? 64-ounce note enough?
No, but we go by what the acharyas say. Lord Chaitanya's made his points, and then the acharyas, they give that to us. And so Srila Prabhupada, on the authority of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he's given us 16 rounds. But we're not just doing 16 rounds on the rest of the day, nothing. We're doing the other 48 rounds in service. Because the point is, chanting is service, so these other things are service. So that way, then, that's why a nice full engagement, that's why then you get 64 rounds worth of service. Like that. That's the explanation. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because one disciple asked him the same point, and he says, you don't see the 64 rounds, but I do. I can see how their service is equivalent to the 64 rounds. So Prabhupada's given 16 as minimum. Bhaktisiddhanta gave 16 minimum. Otherwise, you don't spend that time with the name. You may neglect the name and not take advantage of that. So that when there is something like, you know, like now Kirtan Mela or some other things, some kirtans, then you'll want to take part because we're chanting. But the other 48 rounds, we're doing that in service. That's one. Second thing is that the no chili, but Prabhupada showed us with chili, because the point is if you don't cook with chili, then you can't digest what you're cooking. But you have to know how to use the chili. Means if it tastes hot, you put too much. If it tastes heavy, you've not put enough. But who has caught That's a big one. Just take the cloth like this. Get it like this? Yeah. And just did it go off? Well, seems to like the cloth. Maybe just put it over on the side and let them go away. Because that's a Ganga piece, so you don't want those to bother you. Other ones are annoying, but these ones are. But have it open so he can get out. Okay. So the point is, I found it rare to ever find any cook who understands this point about chili. Really, how many know that the ghee or whatever viscous liquid that you use is balanced by chili? Huh?
Little.
Yes, but no. But the point is, you're using more ghee. You have to put more chili. We can say, oh no, but you have to use less ghee. Have you ever seen anybody put less olive oil on a salad? The biggest natural food freak. They put plenty of olive oil on the salad. So it's not about, they just don't know ghee. They didn't grow up with ghee. Their mother didn't cook with ghee, so they don't use ghee. So that's the one that'll kill you. You know, and if they do use butter, then they'll use that more. So all it is what they're not familiar with. So, but the point is, name me a cook that can tell you that chili and oil balance each other. I haven't met one. Literally. If you mention it to them, they immediately understand. But I've never heard anybody enunciate it. I've never heard anyone say it. Doesn't matter who they are. They have no idea. They use it for, they put the chili, it's another spice to them that you put it in for taste. So they think chili is for taste. And they have a liking for it, they use it. Like southern Italy, they'll use it. Northern, they won't. If they're from south of the border in the Americas, they'd be south of the border, whatever, from Central and South America. So then, you know, because which border? It could be the Canadian border, it could be anything. You know, so they use it, others don't. So you generally see anywhere where it's in the tropical, they'll use chili, and anybody outside of that, they won't use it. You know? So, you know, probably the same thing. You go down to Argentina, they won't use it, but up north, they will use it. So the whole thing is, for them, it's just a taste. But it's not, it means taste is there, like any of the spice, but you have to know how it works. And so therefore, because they use too much ghee without the chili, you said the chili's bad for you. Because they're quoting from, you know, wherever they quote from, some Western this or that. And so it's bad for you, so they don't use it. And so then they use the oil, and it's too much, and they can't digest it. And then they get sick, and then they blame it on Indian cooking. Right? So the point is when you say no chili, but you have to understand, if they're cooking with ghee, then there is chili. How it's there, it may be in the form of ginger, it may be there in the form of black pepper. But the point is the taste of pungent is there. It's one of the six tastes. It's given in Ayurveda. So how can we say there's no chili?
So my point is this, means no black pepper, no ginger, just ghee, not only red chili.
Yes, but this is not the approach. The point is Krishna, it's about the devotion. Right? And if they're cooking with devotion to please Krishna, then it will be good. It may not be the cooking you like, but there's a good chance the region of cooking you like, someone else, the next door, doesn't like it. You know, just like I was noticing something, I was looking up some recipes, on Italian recipes, and this is stuff coming from big chefs. You know, I mean, in Italy, recognized chefs. You know, with certificates and this and that and like that. And then in the comments, someone will say, this is not Italian. And another Italian, I'm Italian, this is not Italian. Why? Because it means his mother didn't cook like that.
Yeah.
It's just like that. You know, it's just like, the guy put butter. We're Italians, we don't use butter. You know, like that. There are plenty of Italians. Like, I remember one Italian devotee came here and I was talking, you know, talking to him about pasta. And he says, in my family, we're from the north. We don't eat pasta. We only eat rice. So all the sauces and all the different things, the arrabbiata and this and the pesto, they put it on rice. They don't put it on pasta. So their region, they don't eat pasta. He says he's eaten more pasta, he's, you know, as a devotee than before he joined. He never ate pasta unless he went to some friend's house. And this is Italian. I mean, like, you know, fully arms flailing, you know, like that kind of Italian, you know. So the whole point is it's yeah, exactly. You know, that one and then, you know. So the whole, yeah, that one. So that's the whole point is that whatever anybody does, no one likes it. You know? So that's the whole thing is that Prabhupada gave a system for cooking, and it was very nice. Everybody appreciated it. He always used chili. But the point is you, for how much ghee you're putting, you put that much chili. Like that. You put the proper amount of salt. You put the proper amount of turmeric. You cook it for the proper amount of time. So everyone has their idea. So the point is, Radharman, they have their tradition how he's doing. Jagannath, they have his. You know, like this, different places have theirs. And then other temples, you know, Tirupati, I think, the Tirupati, they don't cook with chili.
They cook
with chili. Yeah, but that's there. But in Jagannath, they won't put it. They put it afterwards. Because if they didn't put the chili, no one would buy it, neither. So, you know, also in Nathji, they don't put any chili because he's a baby. So they don't put any chili. And then afterwards, they put chili. So the whole thing is don't use these things. Take it as a matter of if someone's cooking to try to please Krishna and all that, then that's what you do. You take it from there. And then you see. You know, don't go by... In other words, the externals are only the field. They're important, but you have to get those externals from the parampara. And so Srila Prabhupada's given us the use of chili, so we use them. We have no problem. Others don't, that's fine. They want to do it that way, that's where you don't care.
Depends, right?
Yeah. So I wouldn't take that as the things. You have to be careful of which ones you take. You have to start with what Prabhupada's given. Is that okay?
There is a separate dish called chili and ghee rice for Balaji.
Yeah?
Yes. That itself is actually a combination of ghee and the chili. And that itself is rice.
It's just only those two in the preparation.
Yeah. There are some additions, but it is actually main content is that. So that's the name it's called. It's very tasty.
Yeah, yeah. No, but if it's balanced, it's always nice. Yeah. Like I've seen some cooks, they can cook so simple, hardly putting anything. But everything is reduced in a balanced way, and it tastes so good. And others cook with everything in it, like, let's say, Punjabis, you know, like this. That, but it has a taste. So that's the thing. I always was impressed with the, what's it called, the Marwari lemon juice. Hardly any lemon, but the balance of, and sugar and that, but it tasted just as good as, you know, let's say, someone else's lemon that put a lot of lemon, a lot of sugar, a lot of other things. It's just a matter of the balance. So that's the thing, is these, what I was saying before about, I haven't met a cook that knew this point. That means they're good cooks. They know how to balance everything, so they never get the chili wrong. But they don't know that that's necessarily why it's working. You know what I'm saying? So then people say, oh, you know, this chili is like this and that. But at the same time, in the Western thing, that means it may not be appreciated. They say chili gets the liver moving. So they recommend chili. But I, you know, how many food freaks have you met that use chili? That also you won't meet. But it says right there, it's for getting the liver. How? I think it's like let's say your foot is not moving, so it's not doing so well. So I take a rock and hit you on the foot with it. You move your foot. You see, your foot's moving. Good, you know. But whatever it is. So that's the difficulty, is you have to be careful who you're listening to where on this. You just stick to what our line is saying and that, and then see others in context. They do, it's nice. You know. So you get all these things. And so somebody picks a particular way they do it, it's fine. It matches a rule somewhere, but it doesn't mean that combination. You know, it's just like a codicil, no grains or beans. That's it. That's all you have to worry about. That's what Lord Chaitanya gave. Right? Now in vratas for Chaturmasya, you have so many vratas and so many rules. And then some of those rules, then to be more simple and austere on Ekadasi, then people apply more of those rules. Like that. But it's not necessary. If you want to be really austere, you want to apply, great. But don't make it that everybody has to follow. It works for you, do it. You know, so it's like you don't take your favorite fruit or root. So then they'll say on Ekadasi you can't use this fruit or this vegetable or this. That's only because that's their favorite. They say no portals. Because for Bengalis that's the best, so then they don't make that. You know? So that's how it works. So you just they may do, but that works for them, that people in that area and that, things like that. Like before, the devotees, they do the near-jaw Ekadasi, every Ekadasi. They want to do, they can. But it's not the rule. The rule is once a year.
No. Sanatana Goswami book, Hari Bhakta Vilasa, told Krishna saying himself, one drop water, it hurt my heart.
That's on near-jaw Ekadasi.
Yeah, not all.
No, because the mantra for Ekadasi, listen, you want to talk, we're talking Hari Bhakti Vilas, right? Okay, so the mantra in Hari Bhakti Vilas says that today, after drinking water, then you say, from now I won't take water again until this time tomorrow morning, 24 hours. And for Ekadasi, you just say that I won't eat until this time tomorrow morning. It doesn't say water. The mantras are there, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So you have to know when it says about water, that means nirjal. So people can take these extreme things here, but then when they go into the bathroom, they don't wash their feet. You know, so no balance. No balance. It should balance. Simple things that we're given. Huh?
No water.
No water. Oh, yes. No water. I didn't think about that. Very good point. Very good point. Washing your hands? No. No water. It's a goddess. Nirjal. There you go. Yeah. So the whole point is that you have to know the context. Because Lord Chaitanya, he gave no grains or beans. That's what Lord Chaitanya said. It's right in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? And for Chaturmasya, you don't take these four. That's four rules out of 44 main rules, and then there's another like 20 or 30 secondary rules. He gave those four. You follow those four? That's Jhajjamas. Then you want to add to that? You can. So that's the whole point. These four are there. If you want to follow, like, this is what you do. If you made a vow, no water, then you don't take water. But if you didn't make a vow, no water, then it doesn't matter. Point is no grains of beans. That's us. So Prabhupada for us is Ekadasi feast.
Yes.
And that's no less spiritual than the person who fasts and doesn't eat. They want to fast, and that works for them. That's good. Others, they eat nicely and then go about and work. I remember seeing one devotee. He used to, I never noticed it. It took me a couple of years of him working, you know, in the school before I noticed that he never ate on Ekadasi. But he did the full day service. He served. He took care of everything like that. Because I'm used to the guys that are the near jaw, don't do anything, chant their 64. They don't do jack shit. They just don't do anything. I'm chanting. I don't serve. I don't do anything with this. I don't do any other serve. Because I'm doing the highest, most, you know, goddamn stuff that you can do. But that's not what Lord Chaitanya gave. You do devotional service. That's the whole point. You have to understand that. So this whole idea is because I'm doing jnana, I'm superior to anybody in karma. This is material disease. It's so-called material piety. Then you use it in Krishna's service, great, you'll be purified. But that aspect where you're proud, you don't get any benefit. It's said that you give in charity and then you brag about it, you get no benefit for it. You don't get any benefit of the charity if you tell people, yeah, I gave so much money, I'm so charitable. You get nothing. So you have to understand this. These people don't get any benefit. So the one that is doing and all these things and you don't even notice, that's the one who's getting the benefit. So we can add in all these things, and Hari Bhakti Vilas, by Sanatana Goswami's grace, he shows us, okay, you want to do like that? This is how you do it. And so then you can use it. But to say, no, it says here this and that, and if you're not doing it, then you're a nonsense, that's only spoken by a nonsense. Literally. Like that. Because the whole point is what Prabhupada's gave us, that's what we work on. Then if you want to add these things and it works for you, great. But if you demand that no one else is doing devotional service or that's not prashad, we're not going to deal very kindly with this. In other words, because this is your first time, then we let it go. But if you ever again say that that's not prashad, you're not allowed to come here for the class. We don't want non-devotional elements in this room to ruin the atmosphere. Because that kind of vision is purely mundane.
I didn't know that there's no person.
But you said that.
No.
You said. No one else said. You said. Okay, maybe you said and you don't understand English good enough, so you thought that you weren't saying. So we'll let it go.
That is prasad if so much chili and Krishna not take because Krishna.
Yeah, but why won't if Krishna doesn't take? But you're saying Krishna won't take. What happened? Krishna's take that Uddhava. He offered banana peels to Krishna and threw away the bananas, and Krishna ate it. Why? Because of devotion. So then it's that you're going to define how it's worked. So that's the whole point. Prabhupada defines how it works, not you.
No, maybe my speaking.
Good, but I'm just pointing out is yes, but we don't tolerate this thing as you just make these judgments like that. Please don't. Like that. It has to be, Prabhupada says, we follow that. And so he's given like that, and so that's what we do. People misunderstand, they lose the things like that, but it means in the 60s, 70s, everybody cooked like how Prabhupada did. Now, who can cook in that way? Who knows how it works? What's the technical point how he cooked? It's so simple, but it's so sophisticated. Very few cooks actually understand it. They're good cooks, but they don't understand what Prabhupada was doing. You explain it, they'll understand it because they're good cooks. But it's like, who knows? So the whole thing is to go by these things. You have to be very, very careful. You know? Because for here, the discussion is how Prabhupada and the Acharyas have given us things to do and what we do. And we have to understand, Hari Bhakti Vilas is showing all the options that how you can engage this wide range of activities in Krishna service. It doesn't say you have to do this. Right? It's saying, if you're going to do this, this is then, you know, in Ahaya Budnyaya says this, and this, you know, in Hayashirsha it says this, and this one and that, and it gives all these different things. And so then you understand. So everything then is authorized. He's from this discussion here with Lord Chaitanya. But we have to be very, very careful, is that we have to want to go back to Godhead, not just, you know, become smartas. Smartas, it's about the rule. Bhakti is about the devotion. We follow the rules, but why? Because Krishna's given this. Right? Shukta Shakati Bhaji Nalita Kushmanda. They get a little closer here to that.
Yes.
Name me other temples that do.
Yes.
Says right there, that's what Krishna eats. Lunch, they cook a bitter, they cook a spinach, they cook fries, they cook a dal, they cook a simple sabji, the dal knows that. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Krishna eats. Right? And then for the chili, you're throwing it all out, and then we'll cook in another way that's nothing to do with what Krishna eats. And then because we don't have chili, though, then we're, you know, dropped out of heaven. We're the chosen ones. So we have to be very, very careful. So that's why Prabhupada gives, we try to follow. We may be good at it, we may not be good at it. But the point is what's right and wrong, what's good or bad or authorized, it's what the acharyas say. And then we have to see, it's what we're given. So when you start from this core point and then go out, then Hari Bhakti Vilas will make sense. But if we don't start from these core points, when we pick and choose, then we'll pick what we want and we're there. You know? We have to be very, very careful. Because just as he says, one drop of water, then it hurts my heart, there's the same kind of levels with all kinds of other things. What happens when you touch the deity and you're not clean? What happens when you have a deity and you don't take care of it? How many devotees have deities in their homes that Prabhupada never authorized? And they don't do a worship. Just whenever they feel like it. Why do devotees have deities in their homes if they're not going to do a full worship? You know, so we don't look at that one. That one's cool. Hari Bhakti Vilas also mentions women don't touch shaligram. It's right there in Hari Bhakti Vilas. How many ladies are touching shaligram and doing the full worship and all that? And we're all cool with that because it goes with the woke, you know, woke political wallahs in the West that everybody's equal. So that's the whole thing. If you're going to pick a certain level of technicality, then be that technicality all around. Don't just pick which ones we like and this and that. So these ones you do, don't do it, you go to hell. These ones, oh, you see, we don't have to do anything and this and that. Then we just put it together, it's our own religion. So that's why we stick to what the acharyas give us. Right? So if you can follow on that level, like Bhakti Chumars, he would, every ekadasi, just do like that. Then that works for him, but everything else would be according to that. But if you're not following like that, then don't get involved. You know, for one day, so near jaw, then go for it. Right? Even have, if you can't even do that, then you have, you know, what do you call it? That's for for Bhima, right? Yeah. So that's because on Ekadasi, he won't fast at all. So therefore, then you're going to be extreme, then no water. He is a Kshatriya, you know, so then they're going to do something extreme.
Yeah.
You know, then it works. So you have to be able to see that balance that's there that the acharyas are giving and avoid getting too distracted by externals and thinking the externals create the Krishna consciousness. No, the externals are there to support, just like we're here. We sit on the floor, right, in this building. And so it's favorable for doing devotional service. But it's not that because of this building, then we can discuss Bhagavata. Right? So it's not that the situation creates devotion. There's plenty of people who don't eat chili. They're not devotees. You know what I'm saying? The whole North Europe, they don't even look at chili. I don't, you know, where are the devotees, right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
I didn't say chili, I said mud. You all the same means I don't say chili, no. So much.
But it's so much for you. I remember one devotee putting a sprinkle of black pepper. And he called, and his grandmother, you know, who was from, they're from Latvia, right? That's up pretty far north. And for her, it's like, whew, so much chili. It was just a sprinkle of black pepper. So you call it too much. They don't call it too much. And if you give it to someone from South India, they'll go, you know, well, this is like baby food. Literally. You know?
Especially where Lord Narsingadev beat
it down there. Oh, yeah, then it's more. Yeah, yeah. These, they put a ton of chilies, and then they take red chilies, grind them into a paste, and put that on the side. So you eat the, that, and then take some of that, to, you know, because it's not hot enough. Because, I mean, if you made just a pure chili sabji, then you wouldn't need the side thing. But, you know, since you want to flavor something. So you have that variety. It's too, maybe too hot for you, then stick to the simple things. Eat the rice, eat the dal. Dal's never too hot. Somehow or another, in India, it's rice and dal are always okay, chapatis. You know. Like that. So you find what works for you, and you eat that. Like that. You know, in the brahmachari kitchen, don't go there. They're going to put more chili. Okay.
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.